Hi, this is Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver-Stamness, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. This week, we continue our exploration of solitude.
Our guest today is Dr. Ellen Kashuk, who is on the phone with us from Costa Rica. Ellen was a professor of psychology at San Jose State University until her retirement. She is one of the founders of feminist psychology, which she has practiced and taught since 1972. She is the current editor of the academic journal Women in Therapy. Welcome to the program, Ellen.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
There's a lot out there about staying active as we age. You offer that solitude and silence are as important to the human experience as is meaningful activity. How so?
Miles Davis once said that the space between the notes is important to music as the notes. And that's what I sort of take as my example of it, which is, especially Americans, we lead a crazy, busier and busier life. It's an extroverted culture. We develop busyness. We try to be as busy as much as we can. And then suddenly we come to retirement age, and all of a sudden it's supposed to stop. And what are you supposed to do? If you're healthy, you're supposed to play golf. And if not, I don't know what. My idea about that as a psychologist is that we don't have rich enough inner lives to start with, that we're paying too much attention to the external, and that we shouldn't be waiting until we're 65 or 70 or whatever the age is to develop just as rich an inner life as an outer life, so that being with oneself can be just as satisfying as being with other people.
You write that free time for many elders is equated with a slow death, so they take up a hobby just to fill time. I do not mean that these activities cannot be meaningful, but rather that they are not if they are only to fill time. So I started wondering, how do we know if an activity is just filling time?
I'm not a fan of hobbies. One possible reason to take up an activity is to interact with other people. But what I see as a problem with that, as a psychologist, is that it's still a superficial interaction. So you're talking about your knitting or whatever it is that you're doing. And part of the problem among people that are so busy all the time is that conversations tend to be very brief and very superficial. It's really paradoxical to be afraid of dying and killing time. And we do both things in American culture. I think we ought to be cherishing time, and one of the questions that I've asked myself periodically all my life is, what is it that really has meaning to you, and why aren't you doing that, or are you doing that? And I think the issue is one of meaning, or what I sometimes call mattering, because mattering suggests the mind and the heart. And if you're doing something that really fulfills what you want to do in life, is number one. And secondly, if you're talking to people on a meaningful level as well, and not this kind of small talk that we have, then I think both things are much more satisfying. It's like having a satisfying meal or having a little taste of cotton candy. Which one are you doing? And I think we're suffering from the cotton candy.
How do solitude and time for oneself balance with the need to stay socially involved and connected as we age?
Well, I think it balances differently for different people. You know, we're not just talking about people being the same. We're talking about people questioning, I would say questioning throughout one's life, if one is doing what one really wants to be doing. And that's a privileged question. Not everybody can do that. As much as possible, to go inside yourself and to understand how much solitude makes sense for you and how much being with other people does. For example, I've become a writer in my later years, and that means for me a lot of solitude and a lot of being inside my own mind and my own heart and observing things. And it means when I'm with people, I want to talk about things that matter to me. And I think the mattering is the key to it.
What are some differences in finding a balance for people who tend towards being an introvert or an extrovert?
In a sense, what I'm talking about now is more the extroverts, because we North Americans live in an extroverted culture, and we value keeping busy. And, you know, the question becomes, what are you going to do when you retire to keep busy? But the prior question to that is, why do you want to be busy? Being that busy is not allowing yourself to fully experience your own life. We're only here for a short amount of time. We go around once, and we should be really cherishing the time and thinking about exactly what do we want to do with it.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert or some mix?
I have a little bit of a question about those kinds of scales and those kinds of categories. So I would say I'm an extrovert when I'm with people. I'm an introvert when I'm by myself. I think people are more complex than that. And I also think that there's a lot of fluidity to who we are. And this is some work that I've done that I call, you know, the mattering map. I think even with categories like gender or introvert or ethnicity, that they're fluid, they morph, they change depending on the context. All those dichotomous ideas that we inherited from Descartes are false binaries and are leading us not to know ourselves, but instead to put ourselves in little boxes. My most recent book is Sight Unseen, where I interviewed a bunch of people that have been blind since birth about how they conceptualize gender and race and sexual orientation if they've never seen another person. So I'm one for saying bust out of the boxes and learn who you really are.
You mentioned the mattering map. What is that?
That is something that I've worked on for a while. I've done some articles on it, and I've been teaching for a few years in Costa Rica, teaching students that are getting degrees in gender and peace. And they go back to their own countries, working with refugees or LGBT population or whatever it is. And the mattering map is a gathering of about 20 different qualities, some of which we've already talked about. And I ask them to ask the people that they work with to pay attention to what is central and what is peripheral as the moments go by. And the same is so in therapy. You come in saying, I want to concentrate on this, and 10 minutes later you're in something else. And the same is so in life. So let's say some people feel like what's most important about them is their ethnicity. That's what they take into every circumstance. If you really ask them to pay attention, it depends on what group you're in, whether that's the most important thing, or gender becomes the most important thing, or whether you're an introvert becomes the most important thing. So I say that human personality is always changing, that it flows, that it doesn't fit in those kinds of boxes at all. And that's sort of counter to my own profession. But it is not counter to feminist psychology or multicultural psychology, where I sometimes place myself.
Well, that was modest, considering you're well known for being one of the founders of feminist psychology.
Well, thank you for noticing that.
Why do you think it's so difficult for people to focus inward beyond just what appears on the surface of how busy we are and, you know, the social media aspects of our lives? What else would cause that?
Well, we live in a culture where it's not encouraged. We live in a culture where philosophy, psychology is getting to be more popular than it was when I started in the field, but the kind of psychology that fixes you or makes you have 10 positive affirmations a day, or a kind of superficial, let me be happy all the time. And Americans feel, I think, as a culture, this is a huge generalization, but we feel that we're supposed to be happy. We have the pursuit of happiness written to us by our founders. And so we think we're supposed to be happy, and we think that that means doing rather than being, and that somehow sitting with yourself is a failure. Just sitting and thinking about what matters to you is a failure. I think the whole culture mitigates against it. I think it's an anti-intellectual culture. You can see by politicians that we have that those that are considered intellectuals, I'm not going to mention any names, are criticized. And in other countries, because I live in Costa Rica now, saying that you're an intellectual is an extreme compliment. Because it means you read, you think, you wonder what life is about. It's a concept that I've been influenced a lot by Buddhism also, seeing everything with beginner's eyes. You know, the way children are, they're curious about everything. They want to be into everything. They want to ask constant questions. Why is the sky blue? Questions that have no answers. And we have that educated out of us. So it's a whole culture that's doing it. It's not individuals, but it's becoming aware enough to notice the culture and to notice that you don't have to do what your culture tells you you have to do.
Well, Ellen, this seems like a good note for us to end on, and I'm going to walk away thinking about your notion that we as a culture are afraid of dying but are focused on killing time. That really got my attention.
Uh-huh.
And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Call me anytime I can be helpful.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the links to our podcasts, email, and Facebook group, go to chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks so much for listening.
We'll be here next week, and we hope you will be too.